One man can change the world with a bullet in the right place.
Welcome back to the New to Pew podcast.
Who the hell do you think you are?
Well, my name is Max Fowlis. God damn it, give it up for me. Welcome back to the zeros and ones that we call a show. And when I say we...
Who the fuck is that guy?
Old Conor McGregor, I mean the one and only BBR Bagman. Sir, how are you?
Good evening. We're going to do this. We are so going to do this.
I'm going to get my pen and my pad, because the Bagman is going to tell me about the second amendment.
You're going to learn today.
So I think this is going to be a two-parter. Probably. I think we should go over what the Second Amendment is, how it came to be, and then in part two, we can break down all the nonsense that people claim the Second Amendment is and explain why they're lying to you.
Hold on to your butts.
You know, the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, came about in 1789. So just a few years after the end of the American Revolution. And it's funny how we wanted the Americans at the time wanted very specific things enshrined in those first 10 amendments. Number two, being a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So I guess we need to break that down a little bit. Are we getting our eighth grade English hats on and sentence parsing? A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. So a well-regulated militia, well-regulated means properly functioning. That was the lingo of the time. Well-regulated did not at the time mean government controlled. Militia is the other one that people seem to have a hard time defining. As if the founders never wrote anything but this one document. You can read the Federalist Papers. You can read the Anti-Federalist Papers. You can read the litany of books and papers and letters and things that these people wrote at the time, including a letter entitled, Who is the Militia? And it was any able-bodied man of a certain age as a citizen of this country was the militia. So if you were a functioning, breathing dude, you were considered part of the militia. It's pretty straightforward. Being necessary to the security of a free state. So again, every able-bodied man being in proper functioning order to defend the nation is necessary to the security of a free state, and not to the security of a tyrannical state, but a free state. Right. So again, it's not government control, government authority. This was providing individual rights. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So that one's pretty straightforward. You know, it's straight up saying people have a right to keep and bear arms and that the government has no authority to snip away at that, which certainly hasn't been our experience since this was written. What do you think so far? Have you ever actually looked at it and broken it down like that?
I've seen it printed on t-shirts, and that's probably about the most amount of wording I've seen it displayed. The thing that trips me up, and I think it's just because of the definition has changed over time, was regulated. In 2023, when you hear regulated, you're thinking it's controlled, you're thinking it's strained. I can't think of a better word. Like when you filter, you know, you regulate something, you slow it down, or if you're regulating water, you know, you don't want to overpressure. So that's something that I think people who have not done enough research really have been fooled by, I guess is the best word, because like sure. You said, the term regulated has changed over time, but no one knows that for the past 50 years unless you've looked into the history of the whole thing.
And again, I think it's because we've changed the parlance of it, not necessarily the actual meaning of it, but we've applied it in a way that's kind of stretched it a little bit. If you tell me that your watch is well regulated, mm-hmm. so that each piece is properly functioning with the rest, mm-hmm. that makes sense, right? Does it mean it's being controlled or held back in some way?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's more that it's been measured and calibrated, right?
I see your point. I think without your pre-context or without your setup, for simpler terms, I would think that the parts of my watch were...
Your bits and pieces.
My bits and pieces were made a certain way in order to conform and stay in line and like you said, function together. And then the first thing that pops into my mind is a regulation uniform. When a soldier's out of regulation, it means like your collar's not tucked in, like you're not in line, you're not conforming, right. You're not, you know, yeah. So it's interesting.
Words are very important. Here's the other thing. Had the irregular U.S. American revolutionaries just fought a standing army? Do you think they were happy with all the government regulations that were coming down on them in the form of taxation without representation and over interference from?
I gotcha. But then,
right. So again, we can scratch the surface with just the language, mm-hmm. or we can take a half step back and look at a little bit broader picture. The other one I think is funny is when they try to claim or people talk about arms.
Yeah, what
being
is
limited to muskets,
arms? Or even yeah. like, you know, I'm always a big fan of the old samurai days where samurai would walk around with swords on their hip and it was just a regular common thing. That sure. I mean, I would consider that to be an arms, a means of self-defense, you know.
Of course.
So why can't we open carry swords like we used to?
Some states you can.
Oh, I gotta move. Tie my hair into a samurai braid and get my kimono out and my fucking... Was it a hakama? I actually have a hakama from my old Star Wars days, but... yeah, see, like, I would... You know, I think this came up in one of the recent discussions of, like, what classifies arms...
Right. And my response is everything. So arms was specifically chosen as a broad spectrum term, mm-hmm. whether it was a knife, a gun, a cannon, you know, you had some of the smartest people of their time involved in this, writing this. They knew of technology that was out there. Things like the puckle gun.
The what?
Which was... Oh yeah, hit your favorite search engine real quick.
Oh shit, let me go to Bing. I gotta ask Jeeves, what is a puckle? P-U-C-K-L-E? The puckle gun was a primitive, crew-served, manually operated flintlock revolver patented in 1718 by James Puckle, a British inventor, lawyer, and writer. That's according to Wikipedia.
It was a crew-served weapon of its time.
Now, crew-served mean like you had a crew, like a couple of dudes?
You had more than one dude working on this thing, yeah. You had somebody helping aim it, you had somebody firing it, you had somebody helping load it, because it's massive. It's not a revolver like a handgun, it's a revolver like a basic machine gun.
Yeah.
So they were aware of certain technologies and they intentionally used the term that would be broad. These same people then wrote letters of marque for people with privately owned warships. I'm going to say that again. Privately owned warships to hunt down pirates.
Oh, okay.
So you had a ship bristling with cannons. So not just one, but you had a whole bunch of them.
And you were able to own your own fleet, if you would, because that was like having cars. So to make it 2023-esque, like having a Hummer with a fucking cannon on top of it, or like having the truck, the Warthog from Halo, like parked in your garage.
The Hilux with the converted to a technical, sure.
So that was, okay, so that wasn't all at that time limited just to the authorities, so to speak.
Correct.
Wow.
And that's, again, one of those things that I think people forget. A lot of the cannons that were used in the Revolutionary War were privately owned. It was things you had because you might need them.
So using the
I think the founders would look at us now with our AR-15s that are neutered to semi-automatic and neutered to certain magazine capacities in certain states, and New Jersey banning the 50 caliber and things like that. And they'd be like, what are you doing? We talked about this. What's the problem? Including one of my favorites, and I haven't looked this up recently, so one of our fact checkers can come after me for this, but I believe it was Thomas Jefferson who argued against including the Second Amendment in the Bill of Rights. So the person credited with founding the Democratic Party, and not because he didn't agree with it, but because he felt it was extraneous, and no one would ever question the right of individuals to own arms, keep and possess them, and bear them as needed.
Question. So our founding fathers came here from Britain, I guess? England?
No.
Where?
No. Many of them were born here.
Okay.
So they were subject to the British Crown because this part of America was still colonies of the British Empire. So many of them had been born and raised here and saw themselves more as Americans than British subjects.
Was there a document from their homeland that had guidelines that they were like, all right, we see how they had it, let's make ours so it's not as fucked up as theirs? Or like, was there an anti-constitution, if you would, that they said, you know, we don't want to do this, like an anti-blueprint or something that, you know,
I'm sure they looked at all the laws and regulations that were being forced upon them. And there I go using the word regulation, right? The way we use it currently. Mm-hmm. But the rules and constraints and requirements, and, you know, again, a lot of this started over taxes, and that they were being forced to send so much back to England and didn't feel that they were keeping enough here, you know.
Yeah.
Somebody else has their hand in my pocket and is eating up all my profits.
Get your hand out of my pocket!
So that was a lot of, you know, well, when I grow up, I'm not doing that to my kids.
I tax my kids now. I tax them now. We used to do like a candy, like if they were buying candy or something, like, all right, give me a piece, you know. Imperial tax, I used to call it.
Wow.
Yeah. Gotta, you know.
I mean, well, and that's on brand.
It is.
Imperialism loves taxes.
Yeah.
It's how they afford the lavish lifestyle.
I didn't know you can own a warship. I'm still stuck on that, to be honest with you. Shit, man. Yeah, I mean, because it does make sense, because when you watch, like, old school style movies and shit, it is up to you and your neighbor to defend the neighborhood, essentially. So why wouldn't you have the best that you could afford?
Sure. And you got to keep in mind, a lot of these people were involved in commerce and trade and business of various types. A lot of people, everything was small business at the time. There were no giant corporations, really. It was the crown was the one giant corporation that was the monopoly over everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody else was, you know, figuring out how to make their way. And they were either producing something to sell, or they were providing a service for a price. And one of those things could be moving cargo. And when cargo gets intercepted by pirates, well, How do we stop that from happening? We're losing too much money to piracy. How do we put an end to that?
Look at me, sure. Look at me, sure. I'm the captain now.
The same way we're losing too much money to government intervention. How do we put an end to that? And a lot of these people knew as soon as they signed the Declaration of Independence, they were putting a bullseye on their forehead. They knew what it was going to cost.
Yeah, and they knew that the ripple effects of that decision would be long-lasting, and they could always have to be looking over their shoulder. So why not make sure that you and your neighbor could defend each other?
Mm-hmm. So here's another fun one to do is go through the list of names that signed the Declaration of Independence. Everybody wants to talk about, like, John Hancock signed it real big, and George Washington became our general and then first president and all those things. And that's all well and good. But take a look at a lot of the other names on there and just pick one and research what happened to him afterwards. Because something like 70% died during the Revolution, lost everything they had, had their families killed. You know, it's was not without cost.
Right.
New Jersey didn't want to go that way. The people that were in New Jersey historically wanted to stay under the crown. I think some people in New Jersey have kept that attitude, specifically when it relates to firearms, private ownership of arms.
Odd question. What's the Third Sure. Amendment?
The Third Amendment is one that never sticks in my head for some reason. First, second, fourth, fifth, third. No soldier. This is a good one. No soldier shall in time of peace be quartered in any house without consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner prescribed by law. So that has to do with quartering troops, because that was the other thing that British soldiers would come and just claim your house.
Oh shit.
So we're setting up, like, camp here.
Old school
squatting. Well, what do you mean? Yeah. Yeah. But to the degree that, like, yeah, you guys are going to go sleep over here. We're going to take the beds, and we expect breakfast to be ready at 0600. So chop, chop.
What is the Fury, the tank movie Fury with Brad Pitt and John Bernthal and Shia LaBeouf? Like, there's a scene where they, like, roll up into some chick's house and literally do that. Like, they're not disrespectful, but there's a tension of, like, sure. You know, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. That's, wow. That's
quartering troops.
So that prevents our guys from doing it, or it being done to our people?
Both.
Oh, okay.
Both.
Okay.
So this is the other thing that we need to take a look at. Let's start with number one. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and petition the government for a redress of grievances. It's a constraint on government to enumerate a right of the people, right? Amendment 2, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, right? So again, constraint on the government, right of the people enumerated. Amendment 3, no soldier shall in time of peace be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner. So again, you can't just tell people what to do. The people have rights. Mm-hmm. Amendment 4, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers against unreasonable searches and seizure, etc., etc. Amendment 5, no person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime. Again, constraint on the government. 6, in all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein, again, rules for the government.
Wait, I thought it was a jury of your peers. No, that's not in there?
That does not appear in there anywhere. It's a common misconception. Here, let's read it all the way through. Huh. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation to be confronted with witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense.
Wow. So where the hell do we
have a right to
your peers from then?
Because the idea is that it's a speedy and public trial in your district.
Okay.
So in your locality, not of your peers.
So the neighborhood decides your fate.
Correct. Correct. Because if you're a corrupt politician, should we have corrupt politicians judging your behavior? Those would be your peers, wouldn't they?
Yeah, that's a good point. I'd rather have the old lady that's been sitting in the window every goddamn day watching everybody go by. She's a better judge of character. I mean, she watches the neighborhood, you know?
Maybe.
She knows what she knows who belongs where. Well, usually. I guess belongs is a bad term to use.
Amendment 8. Excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted.
Yeah, but excessive is subject to definition.
Right. But is that a gift to the people, or was it a constraint on government again? So again, and all of these read in a similar style, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. So they can't conflict with each other. It has to make sense. Amendment 10, the power is not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. So again, it all ties back to constraint on government, preserving the rights of the people, straight across. So before we get into episode 2, the teaser is, so when people tell you it's for the government's right to have a militia, that doesn't jive with anything. Zoom out a little bit and you'll see that argument falls apart pretty quickly.
I get it. And, you know, it's funny, too, because like...
Here's a trick question for you. You ready?
Yep.
Does the Second Amendment give you the right to own guns?
It gives me the right to use whatever possible to defend myself.
Wrong.
Okay. I like how you nodded your head yes while you said wrong, though.
right. Because that's the way most people think of it. The constant, it doesn't give you any right. You have the right already.
It's supposed to be a
God-given right. You have a God-given right. What the Second Amendment does is put constraint on the government that says your rights are not to be violated. Your rights are not to be infringed. We recognize that this is inherently important to the security of a free state, and your right is not to be infringed. It's not a gift from government. A lot of, and this is why I hit you with this, because again, you're new to Pew, right? So a lot of people kind of frame it backwards and go, yeah, no, because we have that, we're allowed to have guns. It's not about being allowed. It's not a permission slip. You have that right from the second you exist, and they're not supposed to touch it.
One could argue, since this was written by our founding fathers who created the original government, wouldn't that make the government the original author?
Doesn't matter.
Okay.
Doesn't matter if that's the original author, because again, read what it says. The right of the people shall not be infringed. It's not saying that due to the government deciding you are allowed to have firearms or you are allowed to keep and bear arms, mm-hmm. you may, in accordance with government restriction. No. It says your right shall not be infringed by the government. It recognizes the inherent right and says the government is not to fuck with it. I see the wheels turning, and I love this because I've had this conversation with people before, and it's always that realization of like, wait, I'm really in charge here? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're getting absolutely no argument or pushback from me. I'm just spinning my wheels as to the different ways it's interpreted a lot. Again, a lot like the Bible, because the wording is, I don't want to say vague, but it's open. And to some degree, it's even open to interpretation. Like, what is arms? You know, like, what's regulated and all that stuff that we already discussed. So it's easy for me to see how the perception of it has been and can be manipulated when it's being broadcast to somebody who doesn't know.
And the whole, that's part of the whole strategy, right? The bottom line is all government turns tyrannical at some point if it's not kept in check. Mm-hmm. If government is allowed to grow and grow and grow, it becomes this monster that eats more and more and more. And it's like a domino effect. It just, it snowballs and it takes over and it picks up speed and it gains more and more and more. And it just keeps going. So this specific government was designed with a system of checks and balances, right? Mm-hmm. We have three branches of government to prevent any one part of government from having too much power. They have to get permission from another branch of government. They have to get signed off on by another branch of government. The interpretation is left up to another part of government, independent of the other two. It's always broken down like that. And the thing that people currently in government really don't want to hear is that the Second Amendment is part of that system of checks and balances, that if the government goes rogue, we have a way of stopping it. It's a doomsday switch for an out of control government. And nobody likes talking about that part of it, because it's scary.
It's like bringing up making a will with your spouse, because nobody wants to think of that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a really good analogy. That's the last will and testament.
Yeah.
For a good government, right? That if it ever gets really bad, here's your do not resuscitate. Here's how you pull the plug.
Well, speaking of plugs,
you want to talk about stuffing things?
I do. I want to stuff some things.
You can go
right
to www.stincusa.com and use coupon code NEWTOPEW to save 10% site wide. Thanks to our good friends over at Stuffing Things, Stink USA.
So that's it for this episode. Be sure to check out the sponsors we mentioned earlier. If you want to join the conversation, you can email us at new2pew@blackbagresources.com. You can check out the website, blackbagresources.com. And if you really want to go deep, you can check out the Black Bag Resources Network and become a part of the community. Thanks for listening.